Okay, now we're looking, should be looking at the PDF file showing the short range indicators with a collapsing bearish T shown in a dotted line. I have this black support level, which is basically the February low that was retested successfully in the a month ago and led to a rally, which then turned back at the black mid-channel line and has come down. Some of the lines are obscuring it, but it's made about a two-thirds retracement. And on Friday, we saw a pop-up. And if you look at the volume oscillator, the blue volume oscillator, you see it went below the zero line and it's popped up. The question then comes is this pop-up something that's going to lead to a, it's oversold enough to continue a rally into the right end of the T, which is basically late August? Or is it going to fail and come up with a different scenario, which we call bearish kinds of T's? And the forecast is it'll come up with the bearish kinds of T's. The green advanced decline line, what you would be looking for if you try to do these bearish T confirmations, is you get a pullback, but it can't. You had a pullback, but you get a little rally on Friday, and then the question is, what can you do on Monday, Tuesday, going into the end of the month, say? And the answer is that if that fizzles and you turn over and you go down and then the advanced decline line goes underneath the center post of the T, then that's what's called a bearish T, because if you made a T, you should have been at a low, and if you go underneath it, it's called a bearish T. In general, I've drawn the three scenarios that you get from any three possible scenarios that you get from any T. The green rising arrow is the bull T, which says that if it was a bullish T, you should have just kept moving up. And then topped out at the right end of the T using the time symmetry that the left side, which is the green dashed line, gives you the time span of the left side. It's T's are always time symmetrical, and so you have a date, which could be the 26th, but it could be something somewhat different, and then you should be rising to the 26th. In cases where the market is really going down, as this channel started to roll over, what you do is the T doesn't have the cash buildup phase did build up cash, but the cash is not planning to come in the present in this present right side of the T, because it does with for example, the leading weekly indicators, which we discussed in the earlier episodes, is falling, suggesting that there is there's a problem in the economy. So they don't want to. What they're going to do is they're going to build up the cash, but they're not going to come back in this time period. Maybe they're coming back in 2012 or 2013, wherever it wants to be. But that leaves the T devoid of any buying power that's ready to come back right away. Then what happens is you develop a hole on the right side of the T, and if it's a mild one, you get which is the sort of the pinkish set of arrows, which is the bear T, which means that the current decline will retest successfully the support level, which is sort of like the center post of the T. So you'll come back down to the center post of the T and drag it out and make it another set of bottoms, which is just a bigger version of this. Then you'll turn up and you should again top out at the in the latter part of August. If that scenario is too strong for the fundamentals, what you get is you get the collapsing bearish T, which is defined by a case where the S&P 500 goes underneath the center post level, which would be, and more importantly, would be the underneath the black line, which is the support level. And that's been pointed out that that's by Christine, that what's happening is you're getting a head and shoulders top pattern forming, and the support level is basically the neckline. And if you break that, you're going to get a downside count. And that's standard in technical analysis. And so if you do break that, you are going to get some kind of a sharp decline that could be worse than what I've drawn here. We haven't proven that it's broke, we're going to break it yet, but that's the forecast. But it's just we'll have to see. The collapsing bearish T is notorious for bad stretches. If you look where the bad examples are in history, collapsing bearish T is the one that is means that you're in a bear market. Okay. And so if you have a forecast that you're in a bear market, that the T is going to be a collapsing bearish T because it's the only one that fits the case. So you can argue it either way. But we haven't proven anything yet. Really depends on the volume. If you look at the volume oscillator, rising bottoms patterns, you can see that the bottom that we had on Thursday is rising with respect to all of these. It started rising bottoms from early May, and so forth. If you put a T in the oscillator low in early May, and you draw it, and you pick up the peak on the left side, what you can be doing is rising into whatever is the T. Okay, so this is possible that this is rising into a top, but you sketch that in yourself, and it's going to top out next week, and it's going to turn over and drop away. And then you're going to, instead of seeing bottoms that successively rise, you're going to see a failure point. And if you get a failure point, that's the real problem. And that's what we're looking for, but we haven't seen it yet. So we'll take a look at that as we go along. You can alternatively look at the advanced decline line giving a weak rally, and that will take care of the issue. So we have to wait for more data to come in. But I do want to point out to you that the difference between a bullish T and a bearish T and a collapsing T relative to the channels that we have here is that the channel is, if the channel is going down, as the black line is coming down in here, the T has to collapse because the symmetry is always there, but the symmetry folds around and goes into this drop, but it always recovers into the top date. So the difficulty you have in bearish T's is that when you make the center post of the T here, and then you calculate a top date, and so they're all true. It's just that the decline is the problem, and that's where you get screwed if you to tell somebody that there's a T with a center post here and it has a top date on the 26th of August. They think it's going to go up, but that it's going to get curled down if it's a bear market. So that's the answer on that point. I think that takes care of the general explanation of where these T's come from and so forth. Now, let me go on to the volume oscillator calculation. There's two parts to that question. How do you calculate it? And then the other part of that one is, I got TradeStation, I got all this money in TradeStation, so how can I can't get the thing to come out right? Well, you see, if you go back to the history of this whole process began when I was an engineer for Hughes Aircraft Company in California, and it started out with a missile engineer by the name of P.N. Harlan, who said that based on missile work, which were very primitive at that time, they didn't have a lot of memory and so forth, they couldn't do moving averages by sampling the numbers, and then they didn't have registers that would hold that on. So they developed an easy way to do it, which is a recursive formula called the exponential moving average. And in the exponential moving average, you could get the same effect as if you added up, like for example, down on the table, you'd have an 18-day volume oscillator, a 36-day volume oscillator. Instead of adding up the last 18 days and divided by 18 to get the moving average, you could actually run this little formula through that mathematically gave it the right state. So you only had to have one memory device, and in computers, in missiles, it was hard to get a memory device. So he says this is a revolution in the whole moving average concept, which is very important in technical analysis. And then Sherman and Marion McClellan, husband and wives, came in and said, if you do two moving averages that are roughly 18 day and 36 days to look at the difference, and you get a very good oscillator. Well, the way they do it, and today, their son Tom McClellan takes care of this, you do it by smoothing rather than days, and it's 10% and 5%, and I put that, the little red lines in there, and so you tend to think of it as in smoothing factors, and the low numbers turned out to be long moving averages because you're only replacing you're updating the data, but only 5% of the new data is being added to the old data. And if it goes down to 1%, the moving average will go to 360 days. And so it's an inverse relationship, and that's what we're trying to that's the way the formula goes. So if you go to the McClellan Oscillator site, which I'm going to give you a reference, but if you go there, it's spelled MCC for McClellan. They do have a spreadsheet, and they have all the data, which is very similar to my data, but the problem is that they use a different somewhat different inputs to the equation. They use 10% and 5% smoothing factors, but for example, I use a volume oscillator, and the net volume, I have a little red line on it underneath it, and that's the net volume in millions of shares, and I have to make a compensation on that one, which is described in the if you go to my T-theory observations, you're at my T-theory observations, you go to the category for indicator calculations, you'll find that the top hit I've now set up is for August 09, but you can go back to the 05 and get another setup. They will give you the directions for computing the oscillator. What I did is I set this table up so that it's easy for you to do. But if you go to the McClellan site, which I think in the 05 gives you the input for the website, what you're going to find out is that the so-called McClellan oscillator didn't use net volume; it used net ADs, and so it's a different set of equations. It's the same format, but they first started out using net AD, which I think is very good. Because basically what you're doing is you're going to get acceleration in the advanced decline line, which is very useful. However, it turns out that I had to make the decision as whether I wanted to go with net volume or net issues into the formula, and I eventually sided with volume because volume was equated with dollars, and the net ADs tended to saturate because on a big up day, really really big up day, or really, really big down day, you could have unlimited volume, and your oscillators would swing into extremes, which you need to do to calculate time spans. But the AD thing would just saturate because almost all of the issues going positive or negative, it tends to saturate. You can't tell the difference between a really, really bad day and a horrible day. Okay, so that was what the story on that one was. So you'll have to just go through the equations, and if you go down to the bottom of this page and you see it says indicator calculations in the categories, you're going to find three things, and you're going to have to go to follow the instructions and so forth. But you can go to the McClellan site and you can download an Excel compatible spreadsheet, and they will show you all the calculations, except, and their calculations are the same calculations as mine, except that they've scaled the volume and the issue, they've scaled the volume differently, and that causes a problem. That means that my volume oscillator, it says T volume oscillator, which is right after the 36-day volume oscillator, is the same as theirs. When you look at their volume oscillator calculation, except it's done by a scale factor, it's just off by a scale factor. So you can download that every day, and you can get the example. You can get the same numbers. They should be all the same. So in any case, go try that out. The question relative to the TradeStation is that the original McClellan oscillator, which is called the McClellan oscillator, uses the breadth figure. So if you're on TradeStation, you call out the McClellan oscillator, you're going to get the one with the issues on it, which is not the one that I used. You could ask the TradeStation people to pick up the McClellan's version of the volume oscillator, which is in that spreadsheet, and then they would be the same except for a scale factor. Okay, so and the reason I picked the scale factor is described in the literature, is that Marty Schwartz always says you should keep plot these data by hand on chart paper so that you, as you plot it, you see what the important levels are, where the turning points are, and so forth. And that's looking at it on a computer or in a spreadsheet doesn't necessarily tell you what, doesn't give you the insight that you need. And you know, you have to take it from that point on. Now the null deco is the third point that I want to touch on. Remember that the null deco was an idea which said that if you came out of a double bottom, which was basically around the October time period, it projected a top in May, was May 20th, that assuming that T projection was correct, that you should have a decline which is equal to the double bottom spacing of the T, which is basically late September, late October, which was 1 month. Okay, so if you made a top in, if the projected top of May 20th had held, you would say that the null low is 1 month after May 20th, which would be June 20th, and so why did it come out to be a top? The answer is because the null deco probably, but I'm not sure about this, but the probably is that it should have been at the end of April. And it was, the actual top was late April, and it still holds that the bottom should be 1 month later. And so that null deco probably occurred early. Not sure about that, but that's what I would say. Now you'll remember that in the double bottom of the advanced decline T, you had a projection top the 26th of April of August, and you had a null deco, which was a 3.5 month decline. I would say that the 3.5 month decline for that, which comes out of that bigger null deco, I would just tag that onto the late April top. And if you do that, you're going to get a bottom in the mid-August time period or earlier. I have some comments from people that say that your August top is really a bottom. That's my interpretation of what they're saying. And the answer is that what I think is, if you get a collapsing bear T, what you're going to do is you're going to bottom in the mid-August time period and turn up to the late August time period. And what you're going to do is you're going to get a rally that's very sharp, but it's the same duration as the rally that we saw going from the green bottom line back up to the black red lead line, just recently completed run. In other words, it's a 7-day trading day rally. And it's very possible that what you end up with, the bottom date and the top date are only different by 7 days. And it's confusing because you have different concepts that are pushing you into different, they're pushing you into the same general area, and you think they're generally correct, but it just is that there's a short rally that lasts about 7 days near the end. So, try that. We'll try that sort of a argument and go with it. And I think that's probably the best that I can make out of a bad situation, which is that Dorsey got the top right and I didn't. The advantage in T theory, though, is if you're sure you got that it should have been May 20th, the fact that it came out a month early is very, very negative. It means that the whole top pattern up there, all those arms warnings and so forth, are a big distribution top. And in a big distribution top, when you go into a bear market, yeah, they have rallies, but they don't last very long. You don't ever want to believe it because it's not a trustworthy environment. And that, in turn, says that if you're starting to think about, about golden bonds and so forth, which is our next subject material, then you don't want to waver on going into the defensive area because the whole thing is, it's all flaky. You know, you're analyzing a corrupting situation, or it is a corrupt formation, and at that point probably is a head and shoulders reverse formation, where the top of the head is in April and you get the left side on the on you know, back early at the top, and then you get, this is the right shoulder, and but you still have to confirm that you have to break that support level. If you break that support level, you'll get gushed down, have a sharp rally, and then you'll continue on. So that's what it amounts to, and we'll probably know that in the next couple of days, because once the volume oscillator goes down to below the zero line, then it comes back up again. What you see is from now on the upside is what you get. Last week you had great volume and breadth data, but the Dow didn't do much of anything. Monday or Tuesday, you're going into the end of the month, is a little bit of a favorable thing. But if that oscillator doesn't come up there, it's probably going to roll over. Once it rolls over, you know, you're going to get into serious problems, in my opinion. So anyway, that's the most I can make out of this mess that you got. It's just a disintegrating situation, and it does say that the rally that started in March is just a bear market rally, which is what you see on the 40 on the 200 year chart with the 40 year cycle trying to turn you over into deflation, and you're trying to hang on the best it can, but ECRI leading indicators are just in a state of collapse, and you know, you don't really believe that there's a lot of upside potential in getting a recovery here before you go in, because it's in the newspapers. Even the Federal Reserve came out with their meeting; they were negative because they've seen the data, and so it turns out there aren't any bulls left around here, and it's very difficult to get things going. It's all short covering is what you're getting here. So, you know, remember that if you're a trader. Okay, that ends this section. Now we're going to go on and we're going to do the bonds and the gold 1-year charts with the indicators.